Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this Constitution,
my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for
this nation. Under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
So sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
Welcome to Missouri Grassroots Radio. It's Wednesday evening. My name is Lisa Payne Nager. This is your Culture Vigilante Hour, and we have a bunch of stuff to talk about tonight. We have several good guests, and I think we're going to have a nice, full, action-packed hour for you. Tonight, hanging with us tonight is Dave Court from the Hour of Truth. I'm sorry, Dave. Oh, my brain is just not working today. Hi, Dave. Thanks for being with us tonight. Let's turn your mic on so you can talk to us. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Hi, Lisa. It's always a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, I'm really glad.
And I'm fine.
Well, good. I'm glad you are, because I'm not so sure I am tonight. I'm a little scattered, it kind of seems. Anyway, so here we are, Missouri Grassroots Radio. We're rolling right through summer. Really glad that we've had a break in the weather here and a little bit of rain maybe tomorrow. How are things down in Springfield?
Looking good. I was just commenting today to my wife as I was out in the yard doing a little bit of work that there's nothing like a good 2 weeks of 105-degree temperatures to make 91 feel pretty tolerable.
Yeah, exactly. And the humidity is gone. So, yeah. I mean, it feels like resort weather here in St. Louis.
Yeah, here too.
Well, there have been a few things going on around town here the last week or so, some things to talk about in the headlines. We were kind of, Dave and I were kind of chatting before we went on air a little bit. House Speaker Tilley resigned a few weeks early. What do you think about that, Dave?
I think probably that the Speaker saw this this opportunity for himself and decided that he could take it. His time of usefulness to the House was over. Good protege of himself sitting there waiting to take the job, so I don't think he'll be missed.
Oh, yeah? So that leads me to my next question. Okay, the heir apparent is Tim Jones. We get Tim Jones a few weeks early. Is that going to be a good thing or not?
I don't think it's going to be a bad thing particularly. The only thing that it might be bad on, Lisa, is we're coming up with a veto session, and that's one less vote to override the president's veto because, of course, Tilley's replacement hasn't been seated yet.
Right.
So
you think that'll make an issue of it?
Well, I don't know. I haven't sat down and done the math and counted the chairs and see how many yeses and noes there are already. So I don't know.
Well, you know, I'm not quite sure how I feel about it. I was never crazy about Tilley. I really didn't consider him a conservative, and I didn't think that he did well by the Republican Party while he was Speaker of the House. We've had our issues with Tim Jones and some of the things that he's done in the past, too, and I'm not so sure that we're going to really see anything different with a new Speaker of the House in Tim Jones. So I'm not real optimistic about that leadership change, but, you know, maybe I'm wrong, and maybe things will be good, so... You never know.
Well, you know, the thing about Jones that I think I noticed in the last session is he doesn't command, he doesn't have the iron fist that Tilley had. I believe that a lot of legislators who want to will buck the system more with Jones in at the helm than they would with Tilley at the helm.
Yeah, I think that's true. I'm not real sure. I've never been real real confident in Jones's leadership abilities as well. And, you know, I kind of hope, I'm not sure how this is going to work. I hope that he can be swayed by the voice of the people. I have seen him acquiesce to some things. I think he's been on the left side of some issues and danced to the other side with a little bit of pressure from the people. So, you know, I'm hoping, I don't remember feeling that way that Tilly could be persuaded as easily. But, you know, when people get into a position and they get into that powerful place, you know, things kind of change. So I'm not quite sure how I feel about how that's going to work out. You know, once they sit in that seat, everything's different. So
That's right. The big test, I think, is going to come early in the session when they try to reintroduce this prescription drug thing.
Yeah, tell me, kind of bring me up to speed on that one again.
It's the it's Nagler's prescription drug thing, and what it is
the
you
drug
would have
monitoring.
Right, exactly. You would have to have a prescription to get anything stronger than Sudafed or anything even as strong as Sudafed or Robitussin. You'd have to go to the doctor and get a prescription. And then, of course, that prescription, as you fill it, as the doctor writes the prescription, it would be entered into the state's database. And as it's filled each time, that would be entered into the state's database, and the state would track how much Robitussin and Sudafed you're buying to decide from that whether or not you are a drug trafficker.
So basically, they're just trying to make a statewide initiative for the Sudafed ban the way that they're picking off county by county. We've already got it in St. Charles County and St. Louis County, so they're just trying to make it across the state.
Well, I don't know. You don't have a thing in St. Charles County where you have to. It already is across the state where you have to go to the pharmacist and ask for Sudafed and sign a piece of paper. You can't buy it off the counter anymore.
You have to have a prescription in St. Charles County and in St. Louis County to buy Sudafed. And they've been going from county to county, getting counties to put this ordinance in. And I remember it was a big deal last year. We had we're going to talk about our very left-leaning St. Charles County Council here of Republicans in short order. But they did pass that late last year where they put an ordinance through where you cannot get prescription, or you cannot get Sudafed without a prescription in St. Charles County. So
wow.
I'm assuming that's what this prescription thing is. They just want to make it statewide so that they don't have to do all the work to pick counties off one by one.
So basically, if you want it, you just go to St. Louis County and get it.
Well, we did until St. Louis County passed it.
Oh.
And now, you know, it's
Washington,
prescription
Washington
here.
Washington County.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what they've been doing, there's been a campaign. They've been going county by county, picking off each county, getting county councils to introduce ordinances where they make it so that you have to have a prescription to buy Sudafed in each county. And they've been successful. They've picked many counties. They're hitting them. So I'm guessing that they're just trying to hit the legislature so that they can quit the county by county thing. So yeah, that'd be great. You know, we need to stop it at the state level because it'll be harder to knock off. You know, you can always knock it off your county council a little bit easier, and as you go up the food chain, it gets a little bit harder and a little bit harder. So people need to be aware of that.
Well, I'm pretty sure that people in Missouri really want it because they sent Engler back up there with a resounding margin. That's his baby.
Yeah. You know, what are people thinking? What are they thinking? You know?
I don't know.
I tried to tell them. I don't understand.
Yep.
Okay. So let's talk about some things in St. Charles County for a little bit. This is my neck of the woods. You know, sometimes I think St. Charles County is the vortex of liberal hell here because, you know, we're supposed to be a conservative county. It's pretty much rhino land here. We have a county council that just, you know, is just power hungry. And last week, there were a couple of issues, I think, that went before the county council. Let me see if I can pull them up here. They are trying to reintroduce. This has been something that's been going on, you know, for the last couple of years in St. Charles County, trying to introduce a smoking ban. And it's been defeated every time. And yet again, they're trying to reintroduce the smoking ban here in St. Charles County. And there's just a long list, laundry list as long as your arm, of ordinances about where you can and where you cannot smoke, and it's basically geared toward penalizing businesses now. they're going to penalize businesses for having smoking. Are you aware of this, Dave? Have you heard
I
about
am.
This?
I read the, in fact, I was sent the, by, I'm trying to find it here in my email, but one of the critters on the council actually responded to my email and gave me a link to the actual piece of legislation. And yes, I have read the piece of legislation, and I am aware of how long that list is.
It's ridiculous. I mean, what they're trying to do is they're trying to designate to private citizens and private businesses where they can and cannot smoke. They're designating that hotel rooms may not have more than 20% of the rooms rented to guests for smoking. Private clubs, legal establishments that does not restrict access to its building or facilities for persons who are 21 years of age or older. I think they're going to allow you to have it in your home, private residences, and private motor vehicles, unless such homes, residences, or motor vehicles are being used for childcare or daycare, or unless the private vehicle is being used for public transport of children as part of a health care or daycare transportation. I mean, I cannot believe how far these supposedly conservative Republicans in St. Charles County are reaching into the lives of the citizens here.
That's
it's
right.
Just amazing. And I know that the people have been fighting this because this has been an issue in St. Charles County for a while. Now, you know, let's just, we're not smokers here. Don't smoke. It's gross, you know. But if you want to smoke, you know, who are we to tell you that you can't do it in a free society?
Well, and once again, Lisa, in my mind, it has nothing to do with smoking. I mean, I know you're not a smoker, but all non-smokers out there ought to understand that this has nothing to do with smoking. It has nothing to do with health. Joe Francis out there saved all his life till he had $150,000 in the bank. He went out and bought himself a business. He invested every dime he had. He's invested his entire life in it for the past 15 years. He's built that into something that is his, and in his business, the majority doesn't rule. You know, Joe Francis rules.
Exactly. Exactly. And if Joe Francis wants to have smoking in his business, you patronize Joe Francis's business or not, as you see fit.
Or not. Joe Francis knows there are consequences to whichever way he decides. He knows if he says no smoking, that's going to cost him something, and if he says smoking, that's going to cost him something.
And you don't need the County Council of St. Charles to tell you whether or not, you know, you can have people patronize your business for smoking. People can make that determination on their own.
That's
but
right.
Again, like St. Charles County was one of the first counties last year also to ban pseudoephedrine without a prescription in our county, they are also going to ban smoking in businesses and other establishments and tell you where you can and cannot smoke.
Right.
And it never ceases to amaze me, and I'm telling you, these are people who have been on the county council since before dirt was invented. These are the old guard Republicans here in St. Charles County who have been in politics forever, who have been, you know, molding the policies here for as long as they've been around, and they just continue to get more liberal and more controlling and more restrictive. I think St. Charles County is becoming the epicenter of tyranny here. It's tyranny. I don't see how it's not anything else but tyranny.
It's not anything else. I mean, it absolutely is nothing else but that. And that's, you know, what you and I were ranting about on Friday night. I mean, do we live in a free country anymore when people can do things like this, when they can tell you have to wear a seatbelt, when they can tell you that you can't, you know, if the city government or the county government wants to outlaw smoking by a vote of the people or even a vote of their representatives in the park, or in any place that the citizens own, more power to them. I think it's stupid, but more power to them. Let them do it. The citizens own that piece of property, and so the citizens can decide. But the citizens don't own Frank's Bar and Grill.
Right.
And the citizens don't own the bowling alley.
And for a place like St. Charles County that's supposed to be such a stronghold of Republican values, stop voting these people back into office. We had a record number of challenged committee man and committee woman seats here in St. Charles County in this last election, and most of the establishment Republicans were reelected back into the seats. Most of the challengers lost their bid to take that those new city council or county council seat, or I'm sorry, committee man and committee woman seats. People are just not engaged. They just follow that R behind the name, or that name that they know the person down the block is going to vote for, and they don't bother to look into the issues. It's breeding tyranny.
You're right, and there are a fair number of people in my mind who are grassroots voters. I mean, the numbers of votes for people like Robinson and Parker, Varner, Emery, Moon, the number of votes for those people was substantial. But listen, and I judged us before this election came myself, and I said this is a pass fail for this movement here. They all got out and they voted for the right people, but we need people who are, but they're not activists. I mean, the people in this movement aren't activists. Nobody knocked on my door, Lisa, the whole time.
Right. And the same, boots on the ground are so important. You've got to, and I had this little rant the other night. I think it was on your show, Dave. I don't know if it was or on the round table. You know, we have all been, over the last couple of years, since the Tea Party movement has formed, preaching to the choir. You know, we all have our core 100 in our little area, and we see each other at the same events. And, you know, while we're very active and we've made some strides in certain areas, we have not learned to cast a wider net. And the grassroots movement is not going to succeed at bringing down tyranny and stopping this drastic overreach on every level of government unless we start reaching out beyond our own little bubble. We've got to reach outside our own bubble and cast a wider net. So the next time we have – go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. No.
The next time we have committee man and committee woman seats open or county council seats open, you need to be able to – if you don't want to discuss it with your neighbors, you need to make some flyers up and put them on people's doorknobs. You need to be able to do something to educate the people that there are choices, not just to go to the – you know, people just go to the ballot box and just check off marks. They don't bother to research. If they get a flyer on a doorknob, maybe they'll think twice and start asking some questions about some other candidates, because they know if you're questioning it, the issue or the person, then maybe they should be questioning the issue or the person, and maybe they'll look a little deeper. We just need people to think a little bit deeper than just, you know, showing up at the polls, which, you know, a lot of them don't bother to show up at the polls.
Yeah. That's right, and it's not just about it's not just about running for a council for a committee seat. It's, you know, Lisa, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago now, we put a grass fire alert item up about Prop E.
Right.
Last week, I put up a action item on the Facebook page about this St. Charles County thing. Now, there are 635 members in Missouri Grassroots Coalition. Many of those members are representatives of groups that have 20 or 30. Our reach at Missouri Grassroots Coalition is probably about 7,000. And we had two letters in 4 days, two emails sent to the St. Charles County Commission. And we have had about 10 or 11 emails sent on the grass fire alert. So it's not just, I mean, you don't have to run for a committee seat. All you got to do is get off your butt and write some emails and make some phone calls and do some things, write some letters, talk to your friends. You don't just get to sit around all day on Facebook grumbling about how bad things are.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, there's a lot of time spent on those Facebook pages. So, you know, maybe we just need to find a way to use our time and our energies a little bit more productively. Here's another issue in the epicenter of tyranny in St. Charles County. There's a police issue. The St. Charles County Council, the Sheriff's Department, has proposed that they go from an elected sheriff situation to having a sheriff appointed by the county executive. Sheriff Tom Neer seems to think that since we are, let's see, I'm not sure if we're the third or the sixth largest county in the state, we're the third largest county in the state, so he believes it's time for us to get into the 21st century, according to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and change the way the police system is structured here in St. Charles County. Right now we have a sheriff's department that handles pretty much everything across the county. He's proposing that under the new proposal, the sheriff's department be limited to court services and security, and the sheriff would still remain an elected position, but we would have a chief of police being appointed by the county executive, and then the county police department would take care of all of the other policing duties. Okay, here we go. Okay, not that we don't already have enough executive order type situations going on in the state and in the county, and that we've also got the St. Charles County Council, you know, driving us off the left ditch here. You know, now we're going to start appointing our county sheriff or our county, you know, police chief here to where the people have even less voice and less control over what happens in their police department. I can't believe it. What are they thinking? And I just don't know what to say. You know, we're going to have Gary Wiggard on here in later on in the show to talk about what's going on in the St. Louis City. But, you know, what about growing government is a good thing? I mean, and where aren't there just red flags and flares going up everywhere about this situation? I mean, what's this going to cost? How are people going to have accountability? It's just amazing. It's just amazing me. I'm flabbergasted. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, you mentioned, I'm sorry, I'm way behind the power curve on that one, Lisa. You did mention that to me, I think, yesterday when we were talking, and I have not had time to research it yet to see how I feel about it myself. I don't know. And here in my city, we have, of course, the county is considerably larger than the city. So within the city limits, we do have a police chief who is hired by the city council, and a sheriff for the county who is elected. Now, he does a lot more than serve court papers. He is the law enforcement for everything outside of a chartered city in the county. I just am not familiar with how St. Charles is the county bigger than the city, or is the city, are there unincorporated places?
Yeah, there are unincorporated areas, and the county is much bigger than the city. But the issue here is, as I see it, I mean, we have an elected sheriff that is accountable to the people now. Okay, and there's an election, and the people elect him, and you know we've got a countywide police sheriff, you know, that takes care of business. So as an elected sheriff, he's accountable to all the people. As a police chief, you would only answer to the county council and the county administrator.
Well, I mean, is there a city council?
There is a city council in St. Charles City, but St. Charles County encompasses many smaller cities. You know, you've got O'Fallon and Lake St. Louis and Wentzville,
right,
and all of the others.
And,
so it would be the county council.
Do they each have their own police department?
Some of them do and some of them do not.
Okay.
So have the St. Charles, you have the sheriff's office that patrols the county.
Yeah, and you know, that's the way it is down here in the sticks where you know, I live in Greene County. There's Springfield, which of course is the third largest city in the state, and we have a significant police department in the city of Springfield. But then there's Stratford, Rogersville, Marshfield. There's all kinds of within Greene County little cities that don't have and can't afford a police department, and the Greene County Sheriff patrols those cities. Now, it's possible. Yeah, I'll just have to look at it and see if it's how I feel about it. It's possible that what the sheriff is saying is, look, you know, they have a police force in St. Charles. Why am I patrolling St. Charles? They have a police force.
Well, I mean, they patrol the entire county anyway. even if the smaller municipalities have smaller police forces. So I think this is more of an accountability issue than a patrolling issue, you know, and a coverage issue. Because I don't think that these other smaller municipalities are going to give up their police forces for that. They could.
Oh, no.
They
no,
could,
no,
but I don't think they will.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on. I kind of want to make an announcement here about the Freedom Center. I got an email today from Dave Rowland of the Freedom Center, and I don't know if you all are familiar with what the Freedom Center is. Dave Rowland and his wife Jennifer established the Freedom Center to be kind of a different kind of a firm to address what's the best way for me to describe it? To address constitutional issues in courts, and to kind of give a little bit different kind of representation to people who have some serious issues on a constitutional level. And they've been doing a great job addressing all kinds of cases. Like they addressed a case here in St. Charles County where they got an acquittal for a Ron Paul supporter on a bogus criminal charge. And, you know, they've done some things in the past. I think they had a lemonade stand case where, you know, somebody was attacked for having, you know, a small lemonade stand. I mean, they've done some really wonderful things, and they've got a wonderful website at mofreedom.org for you to check it out if you want to. But they're kind of, you know, they've been struggling for a while. They've been doing a lot of work for a lot of people, and they're trying to keep it together. But, you know, now they're kind of looking at maybe having to close their doors, which would not be a good thing, because you just don't find many people who are willing to stick their neck out on issues like this to defend these kinds of issues. And we really need somebody to defend constitutional freedoms here for people. Because, I mean, you know, like I said a few minutes ago, you know, we are really living in the center of tyranny anymore. People are just being quashed. So if you have an opportunity to go to mofreedom.org and take a look at their website, they're trying to raise a little money so that they can stay in business and get some contributors, large and small, any way they can. Their target is $80,000. Most of the kinds of businesses that operate like the Freedom Center does operates on $300,000 to $500,000 of an annual budget. They're only trying to raise $80,000 so that they can stay in business and build their reputation and take on some other cases here to help defend freedom here in Missouri. And I know that, I mean, I've spoken to Dave Rowland, and I know that this is the kind of law that he truly wants to practice. He's not out there really interested in trying to go into the regular private practice that most lawyers go into. He really wants to defend these kinds of constitutional freedoms. So if you have an opportunity, go to mofreedom.org, take a look at their website, and if you have an opportunity or the ability to make a donation, please send them a little money. If you know some other donors who might be able to make some more substantial donations, please make them aware of the Freedom Center. You know, I think it's a great thing for us to have here in Missouri, and I sure would hate to see us lose that great opportunity to have this kind of defense for people that need it here in our state. Let's have a real quick also a Prop E update. I talked to Peter Kinder yesterday. We tried to have him on the show tonight, but he's on that bus tour across the state. He will possibly be on your show, Dave, maybe tomorrow night or Monday, because he feels that there will be some breaking news probably by the end of this week or the beginning of next week to give us on the Prop E situation. But what he has done is he has filed a lawsuit with the Supreme Court to try to stop this ballot language that's going on with Prop E that Robin Carnahan so egregiously wrote, you know, so deceptively, so that people are going to be nice and confused when they go to the ballot in November on this insurance exchange issue. And what he told me yesterday is that he's hoping to go back into court on Friday and file a temporary restraining order against the ballot language being printed on the ballots. And they are going to ask for the court to rewrite the new language. And he will also have some more information for us, hopefully, maybe as early as tomorrow or maybe as late as Monday on Dave's show. Have you got anything to add to that, Dave?
I don't. We'll be glad to have him. If he calls in tomorrow, we'll scoot everything aside when he calls and make room for him.
Okay. Otherwise, if that falls in the toilet, Dave and I have been working fast and furiously on some flyers and some action items for us to go forward with if we can't get the Supreme Court to rule like we hope that it rules in favor of really cleaning that nasty language up. So we will be keeping you folks advised on that. Go to the forum pages on MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and take a look at all the information there that we've got for you. Educate yourself on the situation and be prepared for action, because this is coming up in November and it's a very serious issue. And I think on later shows, maybe here, maybe on Dave's show, maybe with the roundtable, we'll just maybe have the discussion on insurance exchanges altogether, because people need to be educated and informed on what they really are. I mean, we really don't need insurance exchanges to begin with, and hopefully we'll get rid of them if we can dump Obamacare in the toilet. Okay, let's take a quick break, and we have a great show for you tonight. We've got Jill Johnson from parentalrights.org, and we'll have Gary Wigert on to talk about the police local control issue and the ballot initiative connected to that later on in November, and we will be right back. Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Welcome back. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is your Culture Vigilante Hour, and I am Lisa Payne Nager. We have been talking headlines all night and talking constitutional freedoms and ballot initiatives, and tonight we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk to you about some other kinds of issues that you need to make yourselves aware of. We have Jill Johnson on the line with us. Jill Johnson is the Missouri coordinator for parentalrights.org. And she is here with us tonight to talk a little bit about what the United Nations is trying to do as far as putting through a treaty in the federal government for the United Nations Convention of the Rights of the Child, and the Parental Rights Amendment that parentalrights.org has formulated to try to stop that, and what that all means to you as parents. Thanks for being with us, Jill. We really appreciate you being with us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay. So, I mean, I've heard a lot about this Parental Rights Amendment for a long time, and you and I discussed this a little earlier. I have really been maybe not so supportive of it in the past.
Right.
I've really been kind of on the fence, because I am not really a person who likes to mess with the Constitution. I don't like amendments.
Right.
You know, we have a good
right.
Constitution as it is, and, you know, when you start tinkering around with things, you get a lot of unintended consequences. And you and I kind of had that conversation earlier this week, and you and I weren't that far apart on it, but you decided to pick up this banner and run with it. So what was it about this that kind of changed your mind and really had to get...
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Can you hear...
I'm sorry. I lost you. Well, the thing about the Parental Rights Amendment is, in the last 10, 15 years or so, things have really gone downhill in the court system. We really can't trust them. In fact, just 80 years ago, about 80 years ago in 1925, the Supreme Court declared that the child is not the mere creature of the state. Those who nurture him and direct his destiny have the right, coupled with the high duty, to recognize and prepare him for additional obligations. And that's really good. And even in 1972, which wasn't that long ago, the Supreme Court said the primary role of the parents in the upbringing of their children is now established beyond debate as an enduring American tradition. However, in a more recent case in 2000, you had the Supreme Court come to six separate opinions, and this is a parental rights case. It came to six separate opinions None of those opinions reached a 5-vote majority. Justice Thomas was the only one to clearly state the parental rights received the same high legal standard of protection as other fundamental rights. Justice Scalia held that parents have no constitutionally protected rights whatsoever. And so we're seeing a shift in our society where, yes, in the Constitution, you read the Constitution, we have rights, we have freedoms as parents to raise our children as we see fit, but those are being trampled on. And the thing about the Parental Rights Amendment that we're introducing, have introduced actually, it's had a hearing in the House. The idea is that it will not change the Constitution. It will just support the rights that are already there. Because I agree with you, I don't like messing with the Constitution. I would not be behind this if I thought they were going to twist things around and you know, misconstrue them and really change it, even if it was a good amendment. I don't like to mess with the Constitution, but the fact of the matter is this really doesn't change the Constitution. It just pulls those things out and makes sure that our Supreme Court, that our justices understand what our rights are as parents.
Okay, can you get into a little bit of detail about what is actually in the Parental Rights Amendment and how it's going to help folks?
Sure. Can I go by section by section?
Sure.
Would that be okay?
Sure.
All right. Well, the first section says the liberty of parents to direct the upbringing, education, and care of their children is a fundamental right.
Maybe we should stop and let's talk a little bit about what is really happening to parents across the country here and in Missouri. I know it's happening to people in Missouri because I've spoken to many. What kind of things are taking place, you know, where parents are having their rights taken away from them?
Well, there are parents who cannot access medical records of their children.
Mm-hmm.
That's a federal law that they must the physician yeah. must get the child's permission in order to give those records out. You have parents who are denied access to their children's library information, including what they're viewing on the internet there. Titles of books that they're checking out, what kind of late fees they're accumulating. You have teenage children who are getting medical treatment in the schools, which would include abortion procedures, and the parents don't know about this. And I think I learned on Saturday that is actually because you have the federal government coming in and their health care is taking care of those things, and that's what's paying for it. There are parents who are being turned away from public schools, not allowed to visit with their children. There was a case which they mentioned in the Overruled movie, which is a movie we use to educate families on the dangers of what's going on with parental rights right now. But there were parents who were concerned about their kindergarten son getting information on homosexuality and being indoctrinated in that, and they wanted to opt him out. They weren't telling the school, you can't teach that. They just wanted to opt him out. And the parent, the father, stood his ground, and he said, I'm not leaving until you say that my son is opted out, because he will not go through this. And they called the police, and he was arrested because he stood his ground and would not leave. And they arrested him on the grounds of trespassing because he would not leave.
Right. So there are just numerous cases across the country and in Missouri where parents are just not being allowed to have the freedom to make decisions for their kids. The government thinks that they can do a better job
Right.
of making decisions for your children than you can. So
right.
there are some, let's go real quickly through some of the things that the Parental Rights Amendment is going to do to try to solidify the rights of parents across the country.
Okay, well, there are just 4 sections, and that's what I like about it, too. It's really simple, really straightforward. Section 1, the liberty of parents to direct the upbringing, education, and care of their children is a fundamental right. Those that have concerns that maybe this amendment gives too much freedom to parents and protects those who would abuse their children, that's unwarranted because it doesn't say it's an absolute right. It says it's a fundamental right. And a fundamental right means that as long as you are caring for your children in a way that's not abuse or neglect,
mm-hmm.
then you have that right. Once you go beyond that bound, the government has the right and they should come in and intervene. Section 2 is a really great section. This is what protects the children. It says neither the United States nor any state shall infringe this right. That's good, without demonstrating that its governmental interest as applied to the person is of the highest order and not otherwise served. In other words, kind of back to the fact that it's a fundamental right. the state can't, the United States or state, you know, the Missouri as a state, cannot infringe upon those rights unless they have serious concerns, which is, you know, usually when the Department of Family Services comes in. Now, granted, they get called in sometimes and shouldn't, and that's found out. But an abuse situation, you know, that would protect children. We worked with the National Right to Life, or we, not me, but parentalrights.org worked with the National Right to Life. They were concerned that these rights might be construed to allow parents to make their child, their daughter, have an abortion. So they included a third section: this article should not be construed to apply to a parental action or decision that would end life. So we added that in there. And then section 4, and this is the most important thing, I think, right now with the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child and also the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, which is actually a more imminent danger right now. But it says, no treaty may be adopted, nor shall any source of international law be employed to supersede, modify, interpret, or apply to the rights guaranteed by this article. And I think that is the most important part of this Parental Rights Amendment, because once you get this amendment passed, then regardless of what kind of treaties they try to pass, it will not supersede the amendment that has been added.
Right. Treaties supersede the Constitution, basically, is how that works, right?
Right. And especially most family law, I think I read somewhere 95% of family law is at the state level. And a treaty supersedes, it becomes the supreme law of the land, part of the supreme law of the land. And the U.S. treaty would
become
a matter of federal jurisdiction and legislation. So, and in fact, actually, let me read something I found. In addition, all family law, 95% of which is currently state law, would become a U.S. treaty obligation and thus a matter of federal jurisdiction and legislation, the largest power shift from the state to the federal level in U.S. history.
Yeah, so there goes states' rights right out the window. So anybody who's into states' rights and understands how important that is, and so many of us are getting into that fight, you know, you're gone. So there's another reason to get out of the UN. So, okay.
Yeah, really.
So I can't reiterate enough. I mean, I really don't like messing with the Constitution, and amendments are just not, you know, what I would like to support. But here's the situation that we've got here. This UNCRC is going through the Senate right now. Is that right, Jill?
Yes. Actually, the one that's most danger right now is the UNCRPD, which is the Convention on Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And
okay.
There's actually an article in that one. And the UNCRC, all it needs to be done to ratify it is for two-thirds of the Senate to vote yes.
It doesn't need to go through the Congress.
No.
The House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
just
so
in it.
Generally speaking, the best, in my mind, the best way to handle these things is, at least here in Missouri and on the federal level, your House of Representatives has the right to impeach judges who do not follow statute uphold and defend the Constitution. And
right.
we don't do that, and that's why we have the problems that we have with our judicial system. And there's no justice in the judicial system because we don't hold them to account. Okay,
right.
So that would be my first line of defense against something like this. But as Jill just stated, this is in the Senate now. We don't have time to initiate an impeachment war against judges and educate people on the fact that, you know, their representatives have not been doing their job by holding their judicial system to account by impeaching them for bad judgments. So
right.
This really does need some attention. It's a state's rights issue. It's
mm-hmm.
it's just bad on so many levels. So
the UNCRPD, the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, Article 7, actually gives the government the ability to override every decision of a parent of disabled children if the government thinks that its views are in, quote, the best interest of the child. And
right.
The UNCRPD, before they went on their summer break, their summer recess from Congress. And John Kerry stated that by July 26th, his goal was to have the UNCRPD ratified.
Okay.
And we thwarted it. We were able to. We got through. You know, the first part of August, and now we're on recess, and that's good. And now we're trying to.
But they're not going to give up.
Support.
Yeah,
no, they're not.
They are serious about it.
So, and once the CRPD passes, if it does, and we're praying that it doesn't, we're working for it to not. We're trying to get all of our senators constantly on barraging them with, you know, calls. And I know they're getting tired of it, but that's okay, to oppose the CRPD. But if the CRPD does get ratified, I can guarantee that the CRC, the Convention on the Rights of the Child, is right behind it.
Sure, absolutely.
So even if you don't have a child that's disabled, you're not out of the woods.
Right. So this is more important than you can ever imagine. So how do people get a hold of you, Jill? How can they learn more about parentalrights.org and the Parental Rights Amendment?
Well, the best thing to do would be to go to parentalrights.org. If you sign the petition at parentalrights.org, you can keep informed that way. The petition is not a legal petition. It's just finding out who is supportive of it and who wants to be informed, and they keep you informed. You can also donate to parentalrights.org. Obviously, a fight like this requires money to keep going. If you'd like to get a hold of me, my email is parentalrightsmo, that's M-O for Missouri, at yahoo.com. I welcome emails. I also have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/parentalrightsmissouri. And those are great ways to keep in touch, too. And I also encourage everyone to call their senators and tell them to oppose the ratification of the UNCRPD and co-sponsor the Parental Rights Amendment, as well as their representatives to co-sponsor the Parental Rights Amendment.
All right. Thank you, Jill Johnson. We really appreciate
you
being with us tonight. Get in touch with Jill and go to parentalrights.org and take a look at that amendment. Okay, we're going to take a small break, and we'll be back with Gary Wigert.
I'm telling you why.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We're running long. Every week I plan these shows, and I'm always worried about filling the time, and we always run long. So I don't know. All hell breaks loose when I get on a rant. So I need to shut up and let some other people talk. We have Gary Wigert with us tonight. Defeat Slay Rorta Political Control. We were talking a little bit earlier about the issue in St. Charles County, how they're trying to railroad in an appointed police chief of police there. Gary Wigert he can probably tell us why that's probably not going to be a good idea, but this issue with the local control has been going on for a long time in St. Louis City, and it's attached to a ballot initiative this November. So we have Gary Wigert with us tonight. Thanks for being with us, Gary.
Hey, Lisa. Thank you for having me on.
So tell me, what's going on with this deal with the local control? Why wouldn't you want people to have local control of their police?
Okay, if I could give you just a little bit of background about this. The St. Louis City Police Department's been controlled by the city, but the appointments are made by the governor. And this has happened at the Civil War, since the Civil War, because there was some kind of debate over who was going to control the munitions and whatnot way back when. And this is the process that's always been going on since the Civil War. Kansas City also is under control of the state, and those appointments are also made by the governor. And what happened out in Kansas City was they used their police officers basically as a political arm to intimidate people to vote back in the Prendergast years. So the state of Missouri stepped up and said, hey, we don't like the way this police department's being run. This is the way St. Louis is run. And so they switched over during the Prendergast years. I think that was in the 20s or 30s. And what it does is it has citizens actually in charge of their police department. Now, what the mayor doesn't like in the city of St. Louis is the appointments, because he can't control those people. But ideally, people like local control, because it's controlled closest to the people. And that's what we have right here. We have local control. Four citizens are appointed, plus the mayor, and they do the hiring, the firing, and set up the rules and regulations for the St. Louis Police Department, and Kansas City does likewise. And right now, the city of St. Louis, the mayor, is trying to get possession of the police department. And what this is about is there's a fight over grants. Right now, the police department applies for these federal grants, and we have an idea of using these grants for things like weaponry, tasers, things like that. The mayor of St. Louis, his idea is to build swimming pools, because he thinks that if he can keep kids in swimming pools, they're not going to be committing crimes. It's just a whole different philosophy on all how this money should be used. And technically, I don't think we should be going to the federal government for any of this money. I think it's just a waste of our federal government money. The city should spend their money properly and not have to appeal to the federal government.
And it's a buying vote kind of thing.
Well, sure, and this is what happens too with our police department is the there's about 80 police officers who are hired mainly by state and federal money, state grants, and then federal money to patrol the streets of St. Louis. And if you think about it, 80 policemen—that's a lot of policemen. That's more than most cities even have as police officers. Yet we have 80 of them because we can't fund this stuff ourselves. We have to get money from the federal government to do that. And I know about that because I was one of the officers. We have four project areas that surround the city of St. Louis, and they have 35 officers who are paid by the federal government. They're city police officers, and they just patrol these four areas because they're federal housing project areas. And so the federal funds pay for these officers.
And so the federal government's giving money to build the federal project areas. They know they're high crime areas, so they're also federally funding the police patrols.
Right. They're funding everything there, because if they don't have the 35 policemen to patrol these four small areas, the crime would really be out of control. It's a high crime areas anyway. But if they didn't have that heavy police presence, it would be like it used to be in the years before the housing authority had city policemen in there. It was just out of control, and I used to be down there myself as a police officer, and the Peabody projects were just a high drug-infested area, and it was just totally out of control. Well, now to keep it somewhat the lid on it, they hire all these police officers to come in and to pacify the area.
So how?
If I could,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I'm good. Go ahead.
So people really don't understand when they hear this local control term. It's very hard for me to explain, because I think you, as well as I, we like the term local control, because politics at the closest level is usually is the best form of government. But here, what we're afraid of is we're afraid of the city politicians taking over all this federal money and all this state money, and spending the money how they wish, and that is the problem here. They look at the mayor looks at this as a big way to grab money and spend it on what he wishes, and not on what the citizens of St. Louis really wish.
How do the pensions play into this, Gary?
Okay, the pensions. Let's see. How do I explain this? The pensions right now. I contribute 7% of my pension. 7% of my income to the pension. We have a separate pension system that's set up. We elect people to be on that. The mayor appoints a number of trustees to be on that pension board. And we currently have $600 million in assets in our pension. Previously, we had $800 million. You know, when the stock market crashed, we lost about $200 million on that. And what happened on that was we administered that for years, and it was when the stock market was booming, it was going great. But what happened when we had the downturn, of course, we lost money, and now the city has to fund the pension on a yearly basis. We have shortfalls right now. But what they did for 13 years, the city contributed nothing to our pension fund. They didn't plan anything out in the future. They just let the fund take care of itself, and we were able to build it from a small fund of a couple million dollars to the $800 million fund we had there for a while. But what happened was during good times, they would not contribute to it because they felt they didn't have to because the pension was making money. Well, now it's a reversal, and now the pension is losing money. And now the fight is over who's going to control this pension money. And I think the mayor, if you watch what he did, the mayor of Slay, what he did here in St. Louis, was he didn't like the way the fireman pension fund was going, so he tried to set up a separate pension fund. And he's, of course, being sued in court right now. And I think the mayor's going to lose on that. But here's the ironic thing of the what the mayor did with the pension fund in the city of St. Louis was he paid a law firm. He paid him $250,000. That was to Thompson Coburn. And what he did was he paid him $250,000, and they conducted a study. And they said, yeah, you can set up a separate pension fund. So he paid them a no-bid contract, gave them that money, and then Thompson Coburn turned around and gave the mayor a $40,000 kickback, essentially, to his campaign committee to run for mayor.
Hmm.
And that is the type of things that we do not want to go on in our police department. I mean, you know, we have corruption like every police department has, but this is the type of political corruption where politicians can use our police department to say you want to buy anything from cars to training to let's see here, tasers, anything.
Yeah,
now, will
equipment.
People in the future, when they purchase these products, will they have to give a kickback to the mayor for his campaign? And so I think the politicians look at this as a way to recover money for their campaigns, and I think that's wrong to do that.
Absolutely. Okay, so Gary, you've been going around the state, you've been talking to Tea Party groups, trying to educate them on this issue and trying to get their support. Tell me what you're trying to do in that area.
Okay, what I'm doing is I'm speaking to different Pachyderm clubs, Republican clubs, Tea Party groups, and I'm asking for their endorsement to vote against I believe this is proposition number one, and to be against it because, you know, when we hear local control, we like that term, but really this isn't local control. This is about political control and taking power from the people and giving it to the mayor. And so when I go speak to the different groups, I'm getting very good reception. I've received a couple of endorsements for our group, and it's called Defeat Slayroar to Political Control. I've gotten the Tesson Ferry Republican Club, the Concord Village Lee May Ferry Republican Club. I've gotten the St. Louis City Central Committee Republican Club. And I've gotten your group out there, K&N. That was a great endorsement, K&N Patriots.
K&N Patriots, yep.
And the Ethical Society of the Police, which is the African-American organization for the St. Louis police officers. So I've started going around different groups and speaking, and my reception has been very well. They've treated me very nice, and many of them have endorsed right on the spot after I've got done speaking.
Okay, and people need to know, this is Proposition A. This will be on the ballot in November, and a no vote will not change the current law. So you want to vote no on this issue. You don't want to change things from what they are now to bring in local control to the police departments. Isn't that right, Gary?
That's correct. And what happened on this was Mayor Slay, I believe he cut some kind of deal on maybe earnings tax or something of that nature. And so he's gotten some Rex Sinkfill money, and they've piled this in, and they went and got the signatures. And, of course, at first they went for a constitutional amendment, but I think they weren't able to accomplish that. So now they decided to go ahead and just do a statewide vote on this, a referendum.
Okay, so
and
is
so
there a way...
there's big money interest behind this, and unfortunately we can't match it dollar for dollar.
Okay, is there a way that people can get a hold of you, or is there something that people can do to help you in this effort?
Yeah, when the vote comes up, and the vote's coming up November 6th during the presidential election, I'd like people to vote against this. If you want, they can contact me at gary.wiegert, that's W-I-E-G-E-R-T, at hotmail.com.
Okay, very good.
We're looking for their support. And, hey, thank you for allowing me to come on and address your audience.
Thank you, Gary. Please come back before the election and renew this information in the minds of voters so that we can help to get this information out there.
Maybe I can come back out there next time out at the K&N rally you have.
We would love to have you. That would be great. Thanks, Gary Wiegert. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week right here, Wednesday night, 7 o'clock, Culture Vigilante Hour, Missouri Grassroots Radio. Have a great week.
take place.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government.
Are you there, Gary?
Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.
Hold on, Gary. I'm trying to get you this. My heart
weeps
on. All right, buddy. Thanks. Well, I thought it was pretty good. I think I'm getting better.
I mean, there were a couple of times when the TV just unpaused itself.
Oh, I know. That's okay. It's fine.
So, what to talk about?
Didn't you listen?
Not really.
You good?
Yep.